Chapter 4. The Pilgrimage Begun. Marie was the first to awake next morning, and with some difficulty recalling where she was, raised herself in bed to take a survey of things in general. The sun was shining brightly through the uncurtained window, and as it had not yet risen very high, she supposed it must be early. Louis was still sleeping soundly beside her, and through the door, which she had not been able to fasten the night before, she could see that Henry and Guillaume were sleeping also. Marie crept quietly out of bed, and managed to wash and dress without awaking the others. Then she went into the outer room, and began to try and light the fire with the sticks and straw which Henry had put ready overnight. She had never done such a thing before, but in spite of her French nobility, she was beginning to think it was very interesting to have to do everything for themselves, though much more difficult than, if she had ever troubled her head about the subject, she would have thought possible. She managed to get the wood laid on the hearth in some sort of order, and then after a long hunt for the tinderbox, she began to try and strike a light. This she could not manage at all, and after twice hitting her fingers, she made so much noise that Henry started up from his straw and was on his feet before he had quite made out what had disturbed him. "Marie! What are you doing?" he exclaimed almost indignantly. "Letting me lie asleep here and trying to light the fire yourself?" "I must begin to be useful now," said Marie, gladly giving up the box into his hands. "I thought it would be such fun to have the fire lighted and everything ready before you awoke. I must see how you do it first." The fire was soon burning away merrily, though it smoked more than the children had been used to. Henry carried Guillaume off to the river again, while Marie hung the fowl in front of the fire by a string from a great nail, which was evidently there for the purpose, and then woke Louis and made him ready for breakfast. Everyone was ready for breakfast before the breakfast was ready for them. The children had no idea how long it took to roast a chicken. They soon found out that the string must be kept turning to prevent the chicken from getting burned, and they put an earthenware dish under it to catch the gravy, but the chicken did not seem at all inclined to turn brown. "What shall we do, Henry?" said Marie rather dolefully. "I don't believe it will be done yet for another hour." Henry looked up from the window where he had been leaning in silent thought for some minutes. "We must wait, that is all," he said hopefully, "and do now what we should have done afterwards." "I have been thinking," and his tone quivered in spite of himself, "that we must go up to the castle again before we leave the valley. We must look over what is left and see what can be taken with us. Also, I remember a map which my father used to study, and on which he marked the way to the coast and told me how to understand it. I do not think the soldiers would be likely to take that away, and it might help us, as I do not know which way we ought to go from here to reach the coast. So I will go at once, and I dare say the chicken will be ready by the time I come back." "I will come with you," said Guillaume, getting up. "Do you like to do so?" asked his brother, looking at him tenderly. "Yes," and the two brothers went away together. It was nearly an hour before they came back, and Marie, who had watched the chicken anxiously, was beginning to think it would be burned when she saw them returning. Guillaume looked very white, but they were both talking calmly, and each carried a small bundle. At first they did not seem hungry, though they had nothing for 2 days to eat except that scanty meal the night before, but Marie pressed them to eat, and when they had once begun, their appetite soon returned. After breakfast, they got out the map, which Henry had found thrown aside in his father's room, and tried to make out their journey. The others, who had never seen it before, could not understand it, but Henry was soon able to show them the Chateau de St. Croix and the one which they had just left. Then he found a line, traced evidently by his father, which led from this valley to the sea coast. "And now," he said, "we can be in no difficulty, for we have only to ask the way from one place to another that lie along the line. The next place from here, you see, is Saint Etienne, so we will ask the way to that, and when we get there, we will ask our way to Saint Germain, and so on till we come to Bordeaux, where the line ends." "But," objected Marie, who had tried hard to follow her brother, "how do you know which end of the valley to go out of? There is only one road. We came by that, and we do not want to go back again." Henry looked puzzled. "I dare say we shall have to go back a little way and then turn off," he said. "But I do not know which way we should turn certainly, and there is no one to ask here." "Couldn't you tell by the sun?" put in Guillaume, who had not spoken before.
"By the sun?
Yes. What a good idea," said Henry, jumping up and running out of the cottage, where the four children had been sitting deep in discussion. "That must be in the east where the sun is now, and we must go to the west, then turn with the sun on our right hand, and there is our way. It is that very road." This point happily settled, they prepared to set out as soon as possible. Two small bundles were made up, which Henry and Guillaume meant to carry. Guillaume had a clean shirt for each, and pocket handkerchiefs, too great a luxury for the peasant children they meant to represent, and a brush and comb which articles they had all agreed were indispensable. Henry had a blanket, in the midst of which was rolled up another brush and comb, and the testament, out of which they had read to them that morning, and between the leaves of which he had placed, unknown to anyone but Marie, three locks of hair, golden, black, and brown. Marie carried the precious map and the remains of the chicken, in which she had packed up as tidily as she could, with a knife and fork which Henry had brought from the castle. It was not much past 10 o'clock by the time all was ready, though they thought it was much later as they had been up nearly 4 hours. At Henry's suggestion, he and Guillaume had taken two clean, though coarse blouses which they had found in the cottage, and put them on above their own garments, which were handsome enough to have attracted attention. Marie could only pin a large cotton handkerchief across her shoulders, and take a straw hat made in the fashion of the province, which must have belonged to the woman of the house. They had not the least idea what might be the value of the things, but they left 5 francs in a little packet on the table, in case the poor people should return. In this fashion, they went up the steep road which led out of the valley. On reaching the corner, they turned with one consent to take a last look. How still and peaceful everything looked. The sun shone between the mountains on the fresh green turf, and the water that ran across it, and the castle lay beneath them as tranquilly as if it had never known a scene of violence. But the ruined heap where the four cottages had been told its own tale, and the open window in the castle showed that dreadful room in which Arella and their mother were even now lying dead. Tears streamed down their cheeks, and for some minutes no one spoke. Then Henry took off his cap, and lifting up his face to heaven, said aloud, "Lord, thou knowest it all. Have pity upon us, and watch over us, and go thou forth with us, our Father, and keep us for ever true soldiers of the cross for Jesus' sake." "Amen," breathed his brother and sister, and turning away, they passed out of the sight of the valley in which they had lost all. In this manner these four children set forth, trusting in God.